All right, folks. Yes, we have a cozy group this morning. Let's get started with the roll call, please.
Here.
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 Here. Thank you.
We don't have
staff introductions.
Staff introductions this month, unless somebody drastically raises their hand. I don't see that. But we do have our esteemed State Board member, Steve Moore.
An alum. We have an alum coming back.
He's slumming here.
Yeah, I got to do the shorter commute today. Well,
it means we did something wrong, obviously.
No, this is not an oversight role. This is a coordination role. Pleasure to be here. My name's Steve Moore. I'm the vice chair of the State Water Resources Control Board, and your liaison, Tam Dodick, sends her best. She's in the midst of the water fix hearings for the proposal to do a change the point of diversion for the state and federal water projects, and so that's an ongoing commitment for her.
We're going to use it to fight fires, right?
Yeah.
The whole cause of the problem.
Because we're not.
Yes. Well, anyway, consider your sources of information carefully. So, very good. I just wanted to say hello and let you know, yes, we still are out there and very interested in the work you're doing here in the San Francisco Bay region. And when Executive Officer Wolf let me know about the subject of the climate adaptation discussion, I was really thrilled to be able to come and listen to the discussion and learn from it, as that's something we're grappling with statewide. I'll touch on that a little bit. I'll just take a few minutes to let you know about some of the things we've been up to recently. In fact, yesterday, we just adopted statewide bacteria objectives. And this is something that's been going on for a while. In a nutshell, it's based on the 2012 updated scientific guidance from the US EPA to protect recreational users of water, swimming, surfing, wading, et cetera. And this is a little bit more of a risk-based system using E. coli as an indicator in freshwaters and Enterococcus as an indicator in saltwater. Also, during the process, it was brought to our attention, epidemiological studies have been done in Southern California showing that the existing ocean plan standard for fecal coliform was a reasonable indicator related to actual illnesses that were shown relative to our proposed Enterococcus-based system. So we retained that in the ocean plan. It was part of the back and forth of that update. Also, there are parts of the standard that in the statewide plan, subject to US EPA approval, that give the regional boards some tools that the LA Regional Board and Santa Ana and San Diego to differing degrees have used, and even this board in the Pacifica Beach TMDL, for instance, to use some tools for natural source exclusion, for reference beach and anti-degradation, then also the tool of possibly using a limited REC 1, limited water contact recreation beneficial use, and a consistent definition for all regional boards to use. That would be a situation where you may have a concrete channel with low flow, and the risk of exposure is not the same as full immersion, and this is something that LA boards use. So I bring those to your attention as there's a procedural hurdle that all regional boards would have had to go through the process of allowing those changes to the standard that the state action now has taken care of, subject to US EPA approval. It was an interesting project. It also established that the state of California can use water quality variances, not only for bacteria, but for all other water quality objectives in all basin plans, subject to US EPA guidance. And so it was just a way of making that a tool in the toolbox. So I think.
And I guess just to restate that it implies that since the state board has taken the action, we don't need to make a basin plan revision or take a separate action on our own, that this supersedes. And we're aware of that. And comfortable with that approach.
Yeah, no, it worked out well. It's just a modernizing, if you will, of the program, but it's in adherence with Clean Water Act regulations, and so just took care of a lot of issues. But we had a very robust discussion with folks concerned about anti-backsliding and other issues. So it was a pretty long hearing, but I was concerned personally that we were being too specific about using the tools only in a TMDL setting, and that a basin plan amendment would be appropriate in case of a if a water board wanted to modify the standard itself. So actually, I intervened on the language and changed it so that that flexibility is maintained, and you don't have to have a TMDL to use the tools. And I think that this region exemplifies why we would want that flexibility, because often water quality protection programs are implemented without the official TMDL moniker. Or
right, your mention of the Pacifica as an example.
Yeah. So good. Anyway, so we're happy to get that done. In June, we also, our Division of Water Quality also made an adoption of sediment quality objectives for the state based on research here and also in Los Angeles and Long Beach. It's from a technical standpoint, probably the most advanced sediment quality objectives in the nation in terms of a real more sophisticated approach of a matrix of the direct effects of benthic community effects, and then also looking at toxicity as an effects measurement, and then, of course, chemistry of different chemicals of concern in sediment as a sort of a triad. And getting that adopted was long in the making. And so those are a couple of accomplishments. And I brought copies for the board members of the 2017 accomplishments report for the whole water board family, and there are some stories here from this region, including the last of the mothball fleet being managed up in Sassoon Bay, but other things that we encourage our staff around the state, at the regions, and our state board to highlight the things we got past the goalposts in last year. Are you familiar with the report? Hopefully, yeah. And of course, it's available online, but I've got this stack of reports in my office that I want to, when I come visit the regional boards, distribute. But these are outside-the-box accomplishments. We have our annual performance reports where we try to set targets for permits issued and, basin plan amendments and inspections and the bean counting. This is our effort at the state board to really acknowledge extraordinary accomplishments that the board members and staff spend time on and don't get necessarily a bean counting credit for, but we know are really important accomplishments. So I'll hand those out when I'm done. Let's see. We're keeping busy with the Bay Delta Plan update. In 2 weeks we're going to have a hearing, really the third set of hearings, on updating the water quality control plan for the Sacramento, San Joaquin, San Francisco Bay Delta, which is our basin plan, quote unquote, that we manage at the State Water Board. It really focuses on flow objectives, that is the quantity of water going to the Delta, as well as some water quality objectives such as salinity levels to protect urban and agricultural uses. And so this has been a long multi-year process. It kind of came out of the Delta Reform Act in 2009. And the state board, and I was on the regional board at the time, state board in 2010 adopted a flow criteria report that, absent all other human uses, what is the scientific basis for what's needed to sustain to have a sustainable ecosystem, and what kind of hydrology is needed for that system. And so it established some pretty high percentages of the unimpaired or natural, what would otherwise go to the estuary absent urban and agricultural uses, and went from there, recognizing that the State Water Board has to balance that beneficial use in that system with human uses. So this has been a long journey. I've been through about 7 days of hearings on the San Joaquin River and another 8 or 9 on the overall system, and the science and the modeling and all of that. So we've noticed the hearing as an adoption hearing, and we have the proposal out for folks to consider in the comments we've received as of the end of last month. We're focused on changes from the 2016 draft. So it's been more of a surgical review of comments.
Steve, apropos of that, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. So,
I know I can always count on you for that.
Of course.
Thank you, Vice Chair.
One of the concerns that we have with rising sea levels is making sure that there's an adequate sediment supply to keep up with, to make sure that all our marshes don't drown and all our mud flats don't become deeper water. And one of the concerns that was identified, but not certainly to my satisfaction, in the environmental documentation for the water fix, was a change in delivery of water from the delta means a change in delivery of sediment. And that's a significant, you know, it's like dealing with new air emissions in a basin which is over the standards. When your wetlands are eroding, a change in sediment supply is generally deemed to be significant. I just want to make sure that you're aware of this issue and that you believe the State Board has the jurisdiction to consider that as appropriate. I know I have my viewpoint, but to consider as appropriate in your consideration of the standards.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the point. Water and sediment go together. And on the water fix, you know, to always remind folks that that's an evaluation of the change of point of diversion for the water rights that those projects hold. And so we'll be looking at, you know, the environmental impact reports, et cetera, that have, you know, see if they did an adequate job of evaluating that issue among many others.
Thank you.
Well, good. Finally, just to acknowledge the discussion here on climate change, we had our resolution in March of 2017 where our staff in the Office of Research, Planning, and Performance made a diligent effort within state boards, divisions, and offices, but also working with the regional boards to identify actions that were specific to these different areas. So it could be financial assistance, water rights, drinking water, and, of course, the regional board's permitting and planning programs. And what the language in that resolution uses the word shall for anything the state board is doing and encourage for anything the regional boards are doing, because we are independent bodies. But it's exciting to see a lot of resonating of themes within all the coastal regional boards as we have these discussions, whether at the chair's calls or our meetings. And then, of course, the Water Quality Coordinating Committee meeting, WQCC, every October. We're seeing this coalescing of thinking on whether it's the coastal regional board issues or the inland issues, that with the drier dry seasons and the wetter wet seasons, and having to adapt to that and work with our permittees and partners to have an adaptable system. So it's a good discussion to have here. It's in parallel with discussions at all the other regional boards, and a real buy-in I see among everyone to share information and think of ways that we can encourage investment, prioritization in climate adaptation, but also mitigation, looking at ways we can reduce greenhouse gases and the incentives in our permits and funding programs to effectuate that in the real world. So currently there was an update in our executive director's report in July, where we were talking about what we're doing at Division of Water Quality, and in coordination with the regional boards and all the stakeholders, evaluating climate change impacts that are specifically some priorities that are identified in our resolution. I think you'll talk about that today, but also due to extended periods of dry weather or drought. And then a third would be for depleting groundwater aquifers, which is an issue even in this region in places, and, of course, increasing seawater intrusion. So these are areas of focus that we're looking at. Currently, if you look at the statewide, all MPDS permits for Phase 1 and Phase 2 municipal stormwater permits already require municipalities to minimize the impervious areas and reduce disruptions in temperature and natural hydrologic processes through the low-impact development. So you're not alone in that. We have that. And there are greenhouse gas benefits to, you know, doing natural vegetation and looking at recharge of groundwater with local stormwater resources, as an example. One of our the recommendations out of staff is that for priorities at the state board, that number one, we should modify the statewide NPDES permit template to include example climate change related language that some regional water boards have already included in adopted permits. So we're trying to take what has already been done. We're recommending state and regional water boards should adopt new reissued and amended permits that specifically identify proposed requirements to reduce the vulnerability of utility infrastructure and maximize the state's water supply. So we're actually affirmatively encouraging regional boards to think water supply, you know, as part of a holistic water management vision. Recommend actions to address climate change impacts that are site-specific and project-specific, implemented through dischargers' plans and projects, such as the stormwater management plans, the stormwater pollution prevention plans, the sanitary sewer or sewer system management plans, and stormwater capture projects. And then the permitting program administrative procedures manuals or other permitting guidance tools should provide guidance on addressing infrastructure vulnerability and climate change impacts on regulated facilities. So hopefully this resonates with a little of, you know, it reminds me of what Lisa helped put together for your discussion today and some of the details. But the climate change resolution did something in 2017. It made considering climate change a real priority in everything the State Water Board does. Similar to what we did about a year earlier when we said human right to water is a fundamental value and core of our mission, more or less. And so now any action we take, we think of climate change, we put through the lens of human right to water and other strategic plan objectives that we've articulated in the past. So we really elevated it, or tried to, not just symbolically, but we're looking at the nuts and bolts of making our water system climate resilient in all of its dimensions. So with that, thank you for thinking about it today and talking about it more. And then there'll be a forum for you to share your priorities at this year's Water Quality Coordinating Committee on that Wednesday, day two. We're using the whole morning for all regional boards to take about 15 minutes to talk about your priorities. It can be at any scale. It could be project level all the way to region-wide. And then we're leaving time after each presentation to have a dialogue and share what we see are differences and similarities between approaches. And that's, I think, I'm trying to remember, is it October 25th, the Wednesday, or?
23rd and 24th.
Okay, 24th, so it would be the 24th, yeah, the Wednesday. All right, well, I'll leave it at that. Thanks for the opportunity to share, and I encourage any questions you may have, and I can go back and get answers if I don't have them. Thanks.
I think we have questions.
I think we have a couple. Hi, thanks for being here. I just had a quick question about the Governor's Climate Summit that's coming up in September. And is the State Board participating, and is there opportunity for the regional boards to support that?
Well, thanks for that question. I should have announced that too. Yes, there's this. I found out that, you know, the lead agency is the Office of Planning and Research, OPR, and they've invited us to participate in the Water Pavilion of the Climate Change Summit, and that's great. And so we have the opportunity to do anywhere from a 5-minute pop-up meeting, is what they're calling them, you know, where you do a quick presentation about things that related to climate mitigation or adaptation that are accomplishments from the whole range of stakeholders, including the water boards. Our climate climate specialist, for lack of a better term, is Max Gomberg. And so he's our staff in the ORPP, the Office of Research Planning Performance, that worked on water conservation efficiency standards that were adopted by the, you know, signed by the governor in May. And so he's turned his attention to preparing for the climate summit and would be the lead person. So if you're interested, I would encourage you to directly contact him. But yeah, it's the climate discussions, as you know, water isn't always the thing on the top of the list, even though it's the thing that makes communities possible and is strongly influenced by energy and climate. So we always have to put some energy into asserting and reminding folks of the importance of water in the climate discussion.
Steve, related question, is there a person or an office at the state level that's taking overall coordination responsibility for all these different departmental efforts and on climate change?
Yes. Really, we have a point group within the State Water Board, which is the Office of Research, Planning, and Performance. It's not the greatest title, I guess, but ORP, you know, is...
I mean above that. I mean at the state level.
Oh, at the state level. Yeah, okay. So that's sort of our nucleus at our regional state board level. Then we report through Cal EPA and the Secretary of the Environment. So that's really the pathway for our participation in coordinating climate change.
And so even outside of EPA, I mean, obviously we have all these state departments. You look at the climate change portal, there's broad state-level awareness and engagement. Is there a person that reports to the governor who's coordinating all these activities of the different agencies?
Yes, and then the Secretary of Environment, Matt Rodriguez, goes through the Office of Planning and Research, OPR, which is Ken Alex's group, directly to Governor Brown. You know, and so then Debbie Franco, have you heard of her? She's really the staff person working for Ken Alex that is getting the climate global climate summit together, along with within our EPA is Ashley Conrad Seda. That's Ashley. She's our point person for the Environmental Protection Agency. That includes Air Board, pesticide regulation, you know, the family of EPA agencies. So that's really the point people.
Got it.
I have a couple of questions.
Yes.
Getting back to the water fix, I guess my question, no, it's a statement. It is more with reference to the fallout from whatever it is that you folks may decide. If there is a big change in the not only the point of diversion, but the rates at which water enters the estuary as a result, I'm sure you're well aware that the fate and effects of several different pollutants that we're tracking closely may change in Suisun Bay and downstream just because of the change in water flow regime. That's something we can all expect. And what we have been talking about here internally is that we may have a need to increase the coverage of our monitoring programs in order to pick up the changes that might be occurring. And so what I would ask you to internalize and maybe share with your colleagues is that we may have new needs for funding for increased robustness of our monitoring programs in several different instances. And to please consider where that money is going to come from. Mm-hmm. We're going to need it. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes.
Second.
Message received.
with respect to the, thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate it. With respect or reference to the sediment quality objectives, it's the triad is a pretty robust mix of different kinds of measurements. The interesting thing about responding to any hits that we get on those objectives is that we don't necessarily have a bad chemical actor, or we don't necessarily know why the benthic community has changed, for example, or what mix of chemicals might be causing the toxicity. So I would anticipate that we at the regional boards will have some creative thinking and good science to want to apply to figuring out what to do about any violations that we get of those objectives. So I'm sort of laying that out as a way to ask you whether you folks are at the State Board are thinking that you're going to tell us how to respond, or are we supposed to kind of take it on a case-by-case basis? How do you envision us implementing those standards?
I think there's a couple. I see it through a couple of lenses. There's an overall ambient water quality assessment framework where it feeds into whether areas of the estuary are impaired. And there's a matrix that's useful based on the results of the different measurements, whether you may have a possibly impaired system or a probably impaired, mm-hmm. definitely impaired, or definitely not impaired. So it sets up a matrix. Mm-hmm. And from there are implementation suggestions, I believe, just to create some consistency. But I don't believe we're too much micromanagement on it, because with any of the pollution issues in any of the regions, you're going to have a prioritization exercise. Yeah. Just like with your triennial review, you look at what standards or priorities to work on. And so, you know, I think we've left enough flexibility for regional boards to choose a schedule and a path toward cleanup. And that's the one lens is general assessment. Then there's also cleanup standards for specific sites
right. That
this should be used. And it's a, I think it recognizes work that had been done here with the PCBs TMDL, for instance, and built on that knowledge. So I didn't see on my review of it, it's been a couple months, but I didn't see a conflict there. And we did work through some details to allow, because San Francisco Baykeeper commented that they were concerned that we were being too rigid in certain ways. So I think we made reasonable accommodation to those concerns.
Very good. Thank you. It sounds like a good framework to start to work with.
Are there other questions?
No. Thank you very much. You came to be a guest at our program this afternoon, and you very kindly shared what was going on and got our response, which is no surprise to you, I know, after being on this regional board for a very long time. So thank you very much.
Always an honor to address the Regional Water Quality Control Board. Thank you.
Let's make sure we get that in the minutes.
If you want to. I don't have any cards for public comment. And seeing no one pop up in the audience.
Okay. Then the next item would be consideration of the minutes for the July board meeting. I'm not aware of any changes needed, so I recommend approval of those.
So moved.
I'll second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? No one opposed? Thank you. The minutes pass. All right, we'll move on to the board member reports then. And breaking with tradition, I would like to go first and re-announce what everyone knows by now, which is that Bruce Wolf is planning to retire at the end of the year after, you know, a really kind of a short-term presence at the regional board.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, can't you hold a job?
Somebody said, why don't I stick around and go for 45 years?
Yeah. we appreciate all 40 years of your service, and especially your service as the executive officer. And I wanted to say just a couple of extra things about that. This board consistently has been appreciative of the very high quality work that comes out of this regional board and the staff. And we know that you, Bruce, have everything to do with that. We feel like we can really rely on the staff work. And it is also well presented. I think your editorial techniques have probably driven people crazy over the years, but we appreciate them very much. This staff has a really impressive understanding and ability to apply good science and cutting-edge science. This region has excelled in creative problem-solving, not just, falling back or defaulting to what's easy, but really getting out there and trying to create a solution that's right to the problems that we've been facing. And the staff is also, and you personally, when I'm trying to encompass your leadership of all the staff in this, I've been impressed with the practical judgment calls that you and the staff have made over the years. We don't operate from a recipe book here. We're trying to solve problems, and it takes a lot of creativity and then sound judgment at the end. And in all those arenas, you personally have excelled, and you have led our staff to excel, and we appreciate it so much. You've created a smooth and high-functioning organization with pretty high morale, as these organizations go, and high morale among the board members who are working with you. And that's not easy. That's a real accomplishment. Finally, I wanted to, on a very personal note, to tell you how much I respect the way you deal with staff members of the public, and anyone who comes before this board, and including the board members. You are gracious, you're respectful. I've never heard you say a mean word about anybody, even those who I thought might have deserved it, after a really tough day in the board hearings. And I think that graciousness has set a tone for this whole regional board that we very much appreciate and will want to carry on. So with all that, I wanted to thank you in public, and I'm sure I'll have other chances to repeat myself, and I hope I will in a larger setting. And with that, I'd like to offer the opportunity for other board members to make.
Well, I will say thank you, and hopefully you can give me a copy of that so I can show it to my wife. What I've been doing the last 41 years, so she has a chance.
She can listen to the recording on the website. You can play that kind of on a loop,
Okay. Well, I it's hard. You're a tough act to follow, Terry, and everything you said, I agree with in spades. I've enjoyed working with you, Bruce. I know that you're not going to disappear, and I'm grateful for that as well. I think I'll just echo what Terry said and say that you know that there's going to be ample opportunity for roasting you, in which we will. It'll be from a place of respect and great affection, because I've been very grateful to work with you for the years that I've been on the board.
Thank you. Thanks.
I also want to echo, I think Terry put it really, really well, and I will roast you a little bit and note that you have worked here longer than I've been alive, and
And he wasn't born into this job either.
They no longer hire children.
Yeah, those laws got put into effect right about the time you got hired.
But one of the reasons one of the things that I have really appreciated about that is that, when, especially as someone who does not come from a background specifically in these issues, whenever I would ask you about something and I'd be like, why is this way, that you are able to give me a context that sometimes goes back 30 years, and I'm like, okay, that's it's a great resource, and it has been really helpful to me understanding things at a even broader level than I otherwise would, and I always have really appreciated that and your patience in answering all of my questions. And so that has been really wonderful. So thank you.
Thank you.
Terry said it really well. And you don't have any idea how hard it is for an old blue to have such profound respect to a Stanford graduate.
Well, I had two parents who were Cal grads, so I had to work through that.
But I think respect is the word. I think Bruce's intellect and his ability with the staff and his ability to work with this board and change things that needed to be changed. I can look at the accomplishments that we've made and know that it was your guiding hand that took our ideas and made them work, and thank you.
Terry does such a beautiful job expressing the sentiments, I think, of so many of us, and so I concur with all of that. I would just add, Bruce, that I just want to say congratulations to you on making a big decision. It's a big transitionary time for you and also for the board, and so for giving us the time to be able to transition well. I just am grateful for that. I also just want to add, I'm fairly new to this board still, but one of the first things I remember getting from you was a copy of your editorial guidelines for the organization. I was an English major undergrad. I was like, oh, this is going to work out just great. Okay. Anyway, thank you. I'm glad to be here at a time when you're here.
Thanks.
Bruce, I'd also like to thank you, specifically for your leadership in modeling civility and openness and thoughtfulness about it, including the perspectives of all kinds of stakeholders and everything that the board and the staff does. And one of the things that's impressed me the most over the last 3.5 years is the tremendous widespread feeling that anyone can come before the board and have their thoughts and science and feelings heard and considered. And I think that's a true accomplishment that, you haven't, that has only grown over time and it hasn't diminished, and that you've been able to teach that to, a whole generation of other leaders, and I thank you for it.
Appreciate it. Thank
you. So revel in that, because as Bill told you,
a few months of roasting.
40 okay. years gives us a lot of material for roasting.
There will be a party at some point, right?
We're running as fast as we can run here. I'm sure there will be, but we're not announcing anything yet. So with that, we should probably do the regular board reports. And is there anyone who wants to fill in?
I have two things. I'm going to finish with the one that's going to be a little harder for me to say. One of the banes of our existence is the stovepiping of information and projects, and some of my efforts have been to try to make those connections. So I'll give you just a couple stovepipes that I'm working on. There's Codornices Creek and concerns about homeless encampments and maintenance, and that's the responsibility of the University of California, Berkeley, who has development down there and they need flood control. There's PCBs in the runoff at Gilman, and that's the responsibility of the City of Berkeley, and there's Gilman Interchange, which is going to be redone, and that's the responsibility of Alameda County Transportation Authority. There's the Berkeley Transfer Station, which is the responsibility of Berkeley's Zero Waste Commission. And there's climate change, which is everybody's fault. And it's not always apparent that those things are all connected, but in fact, back flooding from the undersized culverts at Codornices Creek creeps up, runs down the road south from Codornices Creek along the railroad embankments and the roads, floods the transportation transfer station and causes PCB runoff into the bay. And fortunately, A.L. Riley gave me the documents that put all these pieces together, and I've given them to all the agencies and say, you need to talk to each other. But it's important to realize that, and the value of bureaucracies is they don't just arrive at each new issue and figure it's simple, it could be solved with a tweet. In fact, there's engineering behind it. In fact, there's connections between these issues. And in fact, we have a responsibility to try to make those connections. So I continue to do that. And then the other one, Ron Dellum's passed. And he was the godfather of much that I was able to do at the Port of Oakland. Not long after I was hired at the Port of Oakland, I had a trip to Washington, D.C., and Bob Brower took me into Ron's office and sat me down on the purple leather couch, and this is the first man I ever voted for. And he said, if there's anything you ever need, call me. So there was my back channel, and you might guess that I used my back channel. Ron Dellums was the godfather of Sonoma Baylands, CVPIA. The fact that he had 100% League of Conservation voting record enabled him to twist arms and put together deals that made things happen. He was a good man.
I just want to take a quick opportunity to remind everyone that I've already emailed that coming up next month, following our board meeting on September 12th at 5:30, the Global Climate Action Summit and the Urban Land Institute are having a free meeting in San Francisco on the commercial real estate response to climate change. And I thought it might be a really interesting opportunity to be in the room with some developers who are actually building the new built environment and hearing at the level that they're operating at. So if you didn't get that email, let me know and I'll send it again.
And I'll note that that's one of a number of activities that are sort of popping up around the Global Climate Change Action Summit in September. So I'll try to do my best to publicize not only that, but some of the others. I recently received a heads-up invitation from City of San Jose that they plan to have a function on that day, September 12th, which is also our board meeting, and so there's probably going to be multiple overlaps, but at least I'll see what we can do to benefit from those as much as we can.
You know, I was going to save this for later, but I'll just to get it in the notes, I'll mention it now. The New York Times did a big expose, in-depth story on climate change. I'm actually not going to be able to find it right now. From last week, and I just encourage everybody to take a look at it. It's really a long story about tracing climate change back to 1958 and what was going on with D.C. and the opportunities to have made some big decisions really between 69 and 79 that didn't happen for a variety of reasons. It's both a very hard story to read, but I think for anybody working in the environment, an important story to read. So check it out. New York Times, just put in climate, and it will bounce right up, I'm sure.
Yeah. And actually, I want to second that. I read that article. I couldn't stop reading it. It's
right.
It literally only it covers the period between the 50s and the 80s, and it, in incredible detail, shows how it was a bipartisan issue with real political legs, and then for political expediency purposes, and not just on the Republican side, Democratic side too, got pushed off to the back burner. It's really a remarkable piece of work.
On a more uplifting note, I wanted to let the board, other board members know that I signed a letter on behalf of this board supporting a fundraising effort that SFEI is doing to get its next phase of what it calls the operational landscape units funded. They're going out for private funding. And so I'm on record supporting that on behalf of this board, which I know you all support because we had that wonderful presentation of the operational landscape units, and the resounding response from this board was, we should be able to get this funded all over the Bay with all of the community, various funding communities that we have available. So that's out there. I did talk to Mr. Chabot about it and suggested very strongly that he come up with a better title than Operational Landscape Units. So that was my big input.
I've been telling
on that
one for about a year.
Yeah. So anybody who comes up with something, just, you know, ship the ideas to us. Also, I would appreciate it, Bruce, if during your executive officer report you would update the board on when our Caltrans enforcement hearing is happening, because it has been a moving target, and I'm sure everyone is curious about that. So, but I'll let you go ahead and broach that. Thank you.
I'll cue that one up and start. We had the enforcement hearings in June on a number of the cities that are covered under our regional or our municipal regional stormwater permit. And obviously the discussion was heavy on what are we going to do about Caltrans. We have been meeting, actually Tom has been taking the lead to meet with Caltrans, both Region 4 staff here in the Bay Area and Sacramento staff, and gotten good response on the next steps that they can take. We have prepared a draft enforcement action and discussed that with Caltrans. At this point, we're continuing to work with what can Caltrans do, both in the near term and given their funding, the way their funding works in the longer term. They've been responsive. The near-term issue, though, is that there is the on the November ballot the initiative that would repeal the gas tax, and the governor's office has been talking to us about, let's not do things that might paint a poor picture in terms of that initiative. And so they've encouraged us rather strongly not to pursue action in the short term, leaving it up to us as to what's done in the long term. But so we'll continue to work with Caltrans and make some determination as we work with them as to what it is that needs to be done further in terms of formally recognizing a program for them to move forward. Mm-hmm. Recognize that Caltrans is subject to a statewide stormwater permit that's written differently than our permit over the cities. And so whatever we do needs to recognize that is the permitting vehicle rather than the same wording we might have in our permitting vehicles. So we'll keep you posted. We can't really go into a lot of detail since it's a pending enforcement, and should we want to get down into the weeds, we'd have to do something to notice that, and that is clearly what the governor's office is wanting us not to do in this term. So it still is there, and as I say, I think there's been progress made in working both with the local headquarters up in Sacramento on what it is Caltrans can do moving forward.
Thank you for that. I do hope that the message that the staff is giving to Caltrans on behalf at least of the chair as an individual is that our enforcement action is being delayed because of considerations that are outside of this board. They're the milieu that we work in. And I hope they don't expect to have all of their deadlines set back just because the hearing has been set back. So if you would have the staff convey that opinion from one board member, I would appreciate it very much.
And the vice chair is still taking pictures.
And could I maybe...
Collecting sofas.
Could I add on to that and suggest that if we're not pursuing enforcement action in as timely a way as we are with the cities and other jurisdictions, could we not ask Caltrans to come back later this year with a report on progress they're making on their implementation? I mean, so we don't have to do the enforcement to ask for an update on their implementation. Would that be possible?
My expectation is that we will do both.
It seems
yes,
like a good idea.
Both. Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I know we had scheduled a conference call shortly, but let me run through just a couple things that are in the executive office's report and a few administrative stuff. The board had asked for some background on progress the city of Burlingame was making on improving its collection system performance. And drilling down a little bit, we have an item in the this month's report that provides some background on significant work, in my mind, that City of Burlingame has done, which also points to one of the challenges we have when we're reporting just a metric of sanitary sewer overflows. That, again, drilling down, we found that many of the sanitary sewer overflows they were reporting were under 1,000 gallons. Certainly, if that's in your front yard, that's a lot, but in general, that is something that they can more readily control or clean up. And the other is controlling those spills before they reach surface waters. And so quite a number of the incidents they were reporting were those under 1,000 gallons and those that had not reached surface waters. So the excessive ones were relatively limited, and the fact that they've been able to invest a lot of money into improvements should continue to bring their rates down. So I think that's a good news story. The report also noted that our pretreatment programs at the wastewater treatment works are performing well, but that we have a challenge moving forward in that the funding for the US EPA contractors that we have been relying on is sunsetting. It may not sunset this year, but it's potentially in the next year or two. And so we're trying to work with the State Board on what it is that can assist us in addressing that pretreatment program. In terms of prioritization, we've given that program a bit lower priority because it's a relatively mature program. The idea is that it's a way for the wastewater treatment agencies to have sort of a de facto NPDES permit program of their own so that industries discharging into their system do a level of pretreatment, which improves then their ability to meet our requirements and our NPDES permits. And it has matured over the last 25 to 30 years and been working well. And so we feel that it's still a program that we need to track, but it's not something that takes precedence over other aspects of the NPDES program that we're implementing. I'll also note that staff's made significant progress in doing outreach on enrollment for the general permit for vineyard properties. The metrics are very good, I'd say, as reported in this month's report, based on a lot of that outreach, including coordination with a lot of the local agencies of having public meetings in the Napa and Sonoma watersheds. And it's gone well, and hopefully we'll be in a place to really drill down to determine where are larger properties that haven't applied that we need to gently remind them initially and then get a little more stern as time goes on. But we found trying to work with some of the vineyard management companies who essentially know where all these vineyards are because they work on them, working with them has been very fruitful. So good progress there. A few administrative items, and it may not be considered administrative, but Jim and Nusha are, well, Nusha is not here today, but Jim is. He was not called to the Senate Rules Committee meeting today. The Senate Rules Committee expects to approve the confirmation of essentially all the Regional Water Board members that were appointed by the governor within the past year.
two of the members from the Century Valley region were required to appear, and I think that's specific not necessarily to them as board members, but more to a lot of the issues facing the Central Valley, and that the Senate Rules Committee wants to hear more from them. But the next step would be that we would accept the Senate Rules Committee to pass the confirmations on to the full Senate, and it's quite rare that the full Senate does not take the recommendations from the Senate Rules Committee. So that means that we will ideally hear within the next month that Jim and Lucia have been formally confirmed. So that's good news. I circulated recently to you a memo from State Board Management on board member compensation, and essentially it gets into a lot of detail. We're happy to address that because it's just something that's being implemented starting this fiscal year. One of the challenges is that there's a certain pot of money set aside for board member compensation, and they need to track that moving forward. They had found that around the state there were a few board members who were essentially saying that about every time they said the word water quality or regional board, they were claiming that that was a day of work that needed compensation. And so State Board Legal has reviewed this to try to make sure that this compensation meets the legal requirements. When the compensation was raised a couple years ago from 100 a meeting to 250 a meeting, which included the opportunity to have a preparation day. So if you do have questions on that, let me know. We'll try to get answered. The one area where we do need to be careful is when we're doing meetings besides the board meeting, WQCC, that are clearly those that can be compensated, that if there's something that we feel or you feel should be compensated, that we run it by Sacramento in advance, so that we don't, we either are told, no, you're not compensated for that, or get into the situation where you're expecting to be compensated and we hear after the fact that you're not. So we'll work with you on that one. I'll also note we've announced it before, but we are holding a staff level workshop next week on Tuesday the 14th here, essentially close to the same room we'll be in for the climate change, up on room 10 upstairs from 10 to 1, to talk about the use of wastewater to create, restore, and enhance wetlands. This builds off a 1994 policy the board adopted, and how do we update that to recognize and optimize wetland protection and creation in the face of sea level rise and climate change. So this is sort of the first step in updating our policies. Finally, I'll note that we're working to schedule our board meetings for 2019. Clearly, I want to get them all on my schedule. right now, we are, again, planning for them to be all on the second Wednesday of the month. And in this case, there's no holidays or anything else scheduled on the second Wednesdays of the month during 2019. We'll need to work with the building management to get this room scheduled again. But if there's any reason you feel that the second Wednesday is not workable or needs to be changed for whatever, please let me know and we'll try to run that by. But we're trying to get the schedule set up because, as you know, when we have board items coming before you, we work backwards to figure out when do we need to public notice those, when do we need to run them through our esteemed attorney's review, when do we need to respond to comments, et cetera. And so we want to get this set up for staff and for building management. And that's it from me.
Bruce.
Okay. And let me just, before we get to questions, I wonder if someone could volunteer to quickly email or call ML and let her know that we'll probably be calling her more like 10 after 10 rather than 10 o'clock.
Probably 10:15 or something. So or she said she 10, would 15. Hang on, but yes, good. We can try to get a message to her.
Yeah. this, I didn't get a chance to get this information to all of the board, but after we finish item 5, which is the uncontested calendar, we're going to go into closed session on personnel matters and going to speak with the board attorney from the state board who will be walking us through, helping us manage the search for to replace Bruce. So that's why I need to put that. I was guessing that we would be doing that at 10 o'clock, but it looks more like 10:15. So.
And I'm seeing she sent an email to you and me at 9:15, so I'll use that as a basis to
thank you very much.
Right,
thank you.
A few minutes late.
Okay, now, please go ahead.
Bruce, yesterday EPA announced a settlement with four Oakland companies, Sierra Pacific, which I guess was Allied Ready Mix, and three other Oakland companies for violations of the Clean Water Act. And the announcement talks about having partnered with us in terms of the investigation. Can you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was part of environmental justice effort to look at East Oakland specifically. We worked with Cal EPA staff and U.S. EPA staff on that, both to identify sites in East Oakland that could be sources of pollution to that community, and then to drill down further to identify their actual operations and whether they complied with our requirements, in this case predominantly requiring them to comply with our industrial stormwater requirements. And so EPA then led the enforcement action, and I saw while I was on vacation some emails saying, okay, Cal EPA is coordinating on the press release. I would have probably weighed in and said we should have had a stronger role in that press release because we did some of the on-the-ground work for that. But again, this points to the fact that we are trying to look at where are there facilities in disadvantaged communities that really should be performing in a way that they minimize the potential as a pollution source.
Do the fees go to the EPA or?
I would have to look at that because historically we found that when penalties are assessed that actually the state is in a better position to accept those penalties into the state's cleanup and abatement account rather than the Fed. So I'd have to look at the actual settlement as to how it allocated those.
Can we be confident that the outcome is sufficiently robust to alter behavior where it needs to be altered?
And that's really the biggest driver, is that obviously the amount of a penalty is what makes the news, but in our mind it's what is the company going to do differently on the ground to ensure it doesn't violate permit and it's protecting water quality.
Yeah. I mean, they're very modest penalties. It's $37,000.
And sometimes that comes down to some determination on the number of days of violation, the number of gallons that might have been discharged. And you're right that sometimes the penalties don't seem as robust as they should be, but nonetheless, usually it comes down to a legal formula that's used.
Did we think that the penalty fit the crime? We, the board?
I would say so. We have, as much as possible, again, tried to focus on actual performance versus having someone pay the fees. And this board over the years has heard a number of stories of woe when parties get penalized and saying, well, the more you push me, I don't have a lot of money, and so I have to pay the penalty and not do the work on the ground. And the board has been somewhat sympathetic to that. On the other hand, it gets at a cost of doing business and being fair for all parties that everybody has the same requirement. They should all be meeting that. And so we're trying to use this as an opportunity to drill down when we have about 1,800 enrollees in the industrial stormwater permit. It's hard to be on top of all 1,800. This was an opportunity to drill down on a few in a community that really needs that help.
And they will know that we're watching now on. Yeah, thank you. Anything else? All right, I think we will move on towards the uncontested calendar, and I'll do the swearing in at this point. All relevant evidence that any person desires to be considered by this board must be introduced at this hearing first by the board staff, second by the discharger, third by public agencies, and fourth by any other interested persons. The board and board counsel may ask questions to clarify the testimony of a witness at any time. Cross-examination of any witness by others will be allowed following completion of direct testimony by all persons. Each person testifying will commence by stating his or her name, whom he or she represents, and whether he or she took the oath to tell the truth. The hearings will not be conducted according to technical rules of evidence. The board will accept any evidence or testimony that is reasonably relevant to the issues. All board files, exhibits, and agenda materials pertaining to this matter will be made part of the record of this proceeding. Additional written material will be made part of the record at the discretion of the board. Those wishing to testify in the hearing will now rise or raise their hand. Do you promise to tell the truth?
So do.
Thank you.
Item five is the uncontested calendar. We have actually four items on that. Three of them are action items. One of them is a report item. I'm not aware of any cards. We do not have any supplementals. So I recommend adoption of items 5A, B, and C.
Do we have a motion?
I'll move.
I'll second.
Second. All right. Discussion? None today. Let's have a roll call vote then, please.
Aye.
Board Member Russell.
Aye.
Board Member Pittman.
Aye.
Board Member Batty.
Aye.
Vice Chairman
Rath. Aye.
Chairman.
Aye. All right. The uncontested calendar is adopted. Thank you. And we will go in, as I mentioned, into closed session, but we will reconvene in open session at 11:15.
On the second floor in rooms 2, 3, 4. Or 2 and 3. Okay.
We only second floor rooms 2 and 3 at 11:15.
Enter at 2.
Yes. And the board is going to go up to the 15th floor to the conference room.